You are listening to WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network, coming to you from the heart of the Q in Quitman, Mississippi.
Old Men Stories, a show just about old men? Not hardly. It's a name that conjures up the image of someone who's been through it all, seen it all, and survived it all, like the storytellers of old. That wisdom comes with age. But all age is relative. You don't have to be old. You don't have to be male. You just have to live the story and survive to tell the tale. Join Master Storytellers Roland Willits and Jeff Young now as we start today's journey.
Good afternoon, everyone, from Fremont, California, and Paducah, Kentucky. It's Old Men Stories, where we get real. Real estate, that is. Roland, right there. Yes, you are.
Yes, I am.
We're coming from two different directions here, I know, in that you already own your place and presumably have done this a couple of times, and I'm still, after a number of years, trying to buy my first house. It's fairly, and I'll put that in quotes, fairly simple to rent a place. So you just walk into a place and say, hey, do you have an apartment open or do you have a home to rent? And then you fill out some paperwork that says, yes, I will pay this month every month by the fifth day of the month. Here's my pet deposit. If I have pets, I'm pretty much here's my deposit. Off you go. But I have also been trying to get into the ownership market because, well, for the past few years, it's been a really good time to buy as the housing market has crashed and people are selling their homes. It's a little unfortunate, but a number of years back before that, houses went up beyond where I could honestly afford. So I am very well familiar with the idea of looking at houses over and over and going through the hoops to put a bid on the house and inspections and other things like that. But the ultimate prize is yet to be within my grasp. I do not have house keys yet.
I understand, Jeff. And my circumstances were always we're a little different always. I bought homes. I didn't shop much like you do. I just saw if, you know, I looked at it and saw if I had enough money for to pay the mortgage payments and the down payment, I'd do it. See, you're one of those people that are looking for a home you'll live in all your life, right? Mm-hmm. And I never have. I look for something that I would use and as an alternate to rent. That if I got in and I kept it long enough, I would have equity in it. And real estate kept going up a little, and that's the reason I would purchase. So we started from a different premise because I went through several homes. One of the things that I lucked out with, well, I didn't luck out. Life gave it to me because that was my journey. But after I got out of the service, I had the GI Bill. And at that time, you could get a loan, 3% loan for property and pretty much nothing down for a GI Bill as long as you can make the payments. And so I qualified fairly easy, and I bought a home really fast in Phoenix, Arizona. And then that's where I got my feet wet with real estate. And it was a nice place, and I fixed it up really nice. And I found that renting and owning is pretty much the same, except you have to do more work when you own.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for reselling it, renting's a much more better, and taxes. Taxes and resale, if it wasn't for those two, renting pretty much is somewhat a nicer deal because, well, the landlord is the one that's responsible for all the property, and he's responsible for paying the taxes, and he's responsible for taking care of any major things if that's in the contract. And all you have to do is come up with a little, you know, with money each month. But again, like I say, you're not getting equity, and you don't get any taxes.
Exactly.
Yeah, but those two are the deciding factor. I don't know if they took away the tax incentive. I don't know if it would still be there. One of the things about government is every time they need another buck, they raise your taxes. You know? Oh, look at this. We got someone that owns a home. No, they must have money. They own a home. Let's see if we can get more money from them. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're totally understaffed. We only have 10 people for every one-person job. I'm sorry, I get a little upset with government.
Understandable.
So we need more because in government, your power is how many staff people you got. So the more people you can staff up with, the more power you have. And I don't know how you can change those basic philosophies. You know, I used to read a lot of old Roman politics, and it was pretty much the same. Things haven't changed, at least in the last, since I was reading it back in the 2,300 years ago. So life just goes on, and always owning property is nice because, you do have sort of a control over it. You got to remember, though, Jeff, you really don't own the land. You're renting it, too.
Yeah, you're renting it from the bank.
No, not from the bank. Even after it's paid off, you're just renting it from the government. Because if you don't pay your taxes, they'll take it away.
Hmm.
You will forfeit your land and take it away if you don't pay your tax. The government owns everything. Okay? They pretend like you own it. And in some areas, they've actually put laws on that said you cannot take the land, and they put laws and they have homesteading, and they say if you own it, you get to stay on it till you leave or die, and then when you sell the home, you have to pay all the past expenses.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an exception to the rule that you don't own the land if you don't pay the taxes. Okay? There's always someone around the corner who wants that owns something you have. It's a reality, and every day I look and I own what I own, and I pay the taxes every year, and I can see, my equity going up a little each year. Went way up, and then it went way down. But I had purchased before the major rise. So it went way up, and it went way down, and I didn't even know the difference, Jeff, because I didn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't realize it, then nothing really happened. Tell me your experiences. You've been in the market. You're continuously in it. For years, ever since I've known you.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating sometimes because I have a certain price range that I'm looking at, beyond which if I buy into that level, then it's going to be far more in excess than what I'm paying in rent right now, and realistically far more than I can afford. And I fully believe that if you can't afford to stay in a place, you have no business being in there. Why attempt to buy a place that you can't afford to live in? Because then you're not really living there. You're just kind of barely getting by. And I've had to just walk away from places where they look really gorgeous, but the price is way out of range. And it's hard because I'm doing this by myself. I don't have anybody else that is helping with expenses. I don't have anybody else that is, and you can rent a place with friends. Buying a place with friends then gets into the whole, well, what happens if you two decide to go a different direction and somebody gets married, etc. What do? There are some arrangements you can have, but I really don't know anybody who I would necessarily want to try to go into a house with locally here. It's limited my options, to be sure. But at the end of the day, being patient, I think, is the best thing to do. And I'd rather find a place that I can afford and that I want to live in, that I want to wake up every morning in, that I can walk out the front door and say, turn around and say, yeah, this is home. If I'm not going to be able to do that, then I may as well just keep renting. And the problem with being a renter is that every now and again, there's a little note in the mail saying, hi, we're raising your rent. There's nothing you can do about it. And yeah, I can see your logic in the sense that if you own a place and the government goes, hi, we're raising your taxes, and there's nothing you can do about it. I can see that there's a very, very strong similarity to that. But where I want to be before I retire is I want to be able to own my own place. I want to be able to say, other than paying the property tax, which is significantly less than a month's rent, then I'd rather do that. I'd rather be able to say, I own this place, and I'm happy to call it home. And I guess the thing is that for how homes go, you have to have a certain amount of down payment to get a loan in the place. And once you do that, once you buy a place, you can't move for a while because you have to be able to build up enough of a down payment, unless you can sell the place before you buy the new one, and then you're kind of between places for a little while, for however long it takes. I have heard people do that before, where they'll move out of one place and wind up staying in a hotel for a little while their new place is finished and stuff, but that's even more expensive than just renting. So it is what it is. As far as I'm concerned, I have to be happy with the place. That's more important than how much it costs. That's more important than when to get it done. And if it turns out that they raise the rent again to where something I can't afford, maybe it's time to start looking for another place. But the problem is that I got into the place I'm in now 10 years ago, and the average price of rent has gone up easily $400 a month. So paying another $100 or $270 or $228 is not that much of a raise increase. So it's just been kind of noodling along, and I almost had enough for a down payment, but then my car died. So I'm kind of back a few steps and still looking for the right place at the right time. Roland.
Jeff, I got into real estate fairly heavily back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I started studying, and they had all this stuff on no money down buying property.
Mm-hmm.
You ever hear that?
Yep, they don't do that anymore.
They don't do that anymore?
Nope. Well, they do that if you are low income and you're a teacher or a nursing professional, and you have a very, very small pool of places that you can go to. It's called below market retailer value or below market retail, where they reserve some places for the civil services like the teachers and nurses. But the conditionals for that is that you have to pay some part of the money they give you, you have to pay back over time, which raises your monthly costs anyway. And part of it, you have to pay back if you ever sell the home. As in the
I'm not talking about that, Jeff.
Yeah. No, they don't do the no money down, walk in, sign papers and go thing anymore.
Oh yes, they do. Yes. The only see what the difference is on all of it is you have to find the right sellers. That's the hard thing. Okay.
Ah.
But with no money down, it's about finding the right sellers.
Okay.
You have to shop, and you have to shop for people that really need money bad, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they're in crises, and most of them created their own crises, you know, by getting a divorce, or there's just a line of things that, you know, mile long of reasons that they get themselves in a bind, and they really need money bad, and they will take. And they will carry the paper, okay? And they will put you in for no money down or little money down, as long as they can see the payments coming in each month. It's a super shopping, and it's a super spot of doing a lot of legwork. But there's always some deals out there, always. So you might look into it.
Okay.
I did it, and I owned a house in Concord, and I owned one on Walnut Creek. Okay.
Hmm.
And I sold them too soon. I made a little money, but I sold them about a year and a half, 2 years too soon. I could have made a couple hundred thousand off each one of them extra. But that seems to be the way. It's like I learned how to do this stuff, and then I don't even follow my own rules. But real estate is very interesting, and it's something that you should study all of the exceptions and things connected with it, because there's always something, there's an angle, there's like 10,000 billion angles that people do, and most of them are honest. I'm not talking about this anything dishonest at all. I'm talking about just being ready for the opportunity. I did, and everything I ever did was above board. And I was very honorable with all the processes I did, and it has been fairly successful for me. But I have to tell you, I never got the lowest price, and I never sold at the highest price, but I just sort of stuck with it. One of the philosophies in my life, my story is, I found that I have a tendency to always pay the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of ingrained in my being is you always create enough money to pay the mortgages. So that's always happened my whole life. And, you know, cross my fingers, I hope that the universe continues with that process with me. And it has always paid off in the long run, even though I may not get the best deal in the world. I had to skimp and scrape and pay mortgages when I could have went on Hawaiian vacations, you know. And in the long run, it was very, very, very stable for me and monetarily nice. It was really, it's nice. Right now, it's a very nice position. But when you're, as you're going through it, it sometimes gets very, very scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and where I am right now is pretty much in that giving up on things that I'd love to do more of, like travel more or replace things more often than only when they break down. And that's what scares me about trying to buy a place, is that anything that costs significantly more than what I'm paying right now is going to put me in a worse situation than I am. And owning a place is not worth that extra stress.
That's true. QOL. Old Men's Stories is about QOL, quality of life.
Gotcha.
Quality of life. That's very, 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 very important. And somewhere down the road, I got QOL. It's like all the money in the world doesn't matter if you're sick. You know what I'm saying?
Indeed.
And there is no doctors that can cure what you have. It doesn't matter how much money you have.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally miserable. It doesn't matter how much money you have.
Yep.
Money does not create happiness. However, not having nice money, having nice amounts of money is always, always, always wonderful. And real estate is a path, but there's a lot of people that I know that have, you know, bought fixer-uppers, Jeff, and then fixed them up and sold them, and then bought them, you know, got two instead of one, then fixed them up and sold them, and they worked many years to build it up where they, somewhere down the road, they have a really nice income flow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always the thing. But again, what you have to do is put in a huge amount of time and effort, you know, on your leisure time, of fixing up homes instead of going places. So you do your own work instead of trying to go out and earn more money or carrying several jobs and then hiring someone else to do it. So that's also a path. And it can be done a little easier if you're in the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that I can fix homes. I absolutely hate it. It's like, Roland, fix this. Oh. So we all have the things we love to do and the things that sort of are there. We'd rather pay the money to have someone else do it. Right?
Yep. I think if I ever tried to fix up my own home, I'd be horrible at it. Hammering a nail in a straight angle, measuring things in a straight line, those are things that I do not do very well. I do not have the do-it-yourself gene. Unfortunately.
Well, actually, you can acquire it. You can sit and look, study. You can sit every night instead of watching or doing something leisure. You sit and watch do-it-yourself stuff on the web, and you will eventually pick it up and practice it. But again, you have to have the love or the interest to do it. Again, that's where I'm missing it. It's that this isn't really fun. I would rather do something else and earn money and have someone else do it.
I will say that one quick tip for real estate before we go to our break, because I know we're coming up on it fairly shortly, is that there are really good tools these days to help you find a home. One of them I use is called Redfin, R-E-D-F-I-N, www.redfin.com. And all I do is I type in a zip code and set some parameters like price and beds and baths I'm looking for, and there are other things for it too. And then it says, here are the homes that match your search. And there's a thumbnail with pictures of the person posted a has a name, place where it shows up on the map, a general history of what the house was like, various things. And it's been an invaluable tool to find places just for me to look at on my own. And I recommend using it if it is available in your particular area. But one more thing that I want to touch on is that find a good realtor. And what I mean by that is someone who has your best interest in mind as a buyer or a seller. The ones that insist that you buy a house because it's less expensive than renting without even knowing how much you make, or if they tell you that you will make it all back later in taxes or in a tax write-off, those are the dangerous ones. Because right. I have run into so many realtors that do the wrong thing and get you into a house that is really kind of saddening. This is what's having our housing problem today. But we'll be back with more Old Men Stories in just a few moments.
You're listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. Roland and Jeff will be right back with more of Old Men Stories after this short break.
This is Terry Willits, Mom Software, giving stability, service, and excellence.
Thank you, Terry, for the leadership at Mom Software and the noble example you set for all. From our home here in Silicon Valley, from where it all started in San Francisco 35 years ago, we welcome you to Old Men Stories. We hope you will continue listening to our radio presentation. We know you will hear a few wonderful stories that started from the home of Mom Software. www.momsoftware.com. One word.
And we're back with more of Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. You're invited to join the circle and share your comments and questions in our always open chat room at http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. That's http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. Now, let's give a warm welcome to our hosts, Roland and Jeff, as we continue today's storytelling journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to the second half of Old Men Stories, the real estate episode. And to kind of pick up where I left off before the break, the time I first started looking for houses, there were any number of postcards saying, own a place for less than what you're paying right now in rent. And what it turned out to be was it was a 3-1, 3-year or 1-year refinance loan or 5-1 ARM adjustable rate mortgage, where all of the heavy costs were 3 and 5 years down the line. So you would be able to pay $1,100 now for the first year, but they didn't tell you that 5 years down the line, you were paying $1,700 a month instead of $1,100, and that mortgage was only for those 5 years. Then you had to find someone to refinance. And their goal was to say, well, just own the house for 3 to 5 years, depending on which one you got, and then you could sell it at a profit because the place would go up in value. Well, this time this happened was 2000, and we all know what happened after that. Well, at least here in California anyway, the housing market tanked and a lot of people lost their houses because their mortgages went up, and not only could they not afford the new mortgages, but no one would refinance them because their house was now underwater. And that's why we had a lot of foreclosures. But anyway, Roland, are you there? I think I hear you moving around back there.
Yes, I am. I'm here, and yes, I know this. And yes, I watched it happen, and I said, I don't, you know, they were building brand new homes in small towns out in rural California, and they put big housing things in there. And I said, did it that way? And I said, it's a make believe. These people aren't going to make that much more. They're not going to make that much more in 2-3 years. They're just not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat and watched it. And I said, don't they see that? And yet I saw, I had one of my staff that did that. And I didn't want to know where they did it. But there wasn't much I could say anyway. You know, it doesn't matter what you tell them, they'll do what they want. Yeah, it's a toughie. It's a toughie in life. And yet on the other side of it, if you see that that your life is and your income is expanding at a good rate, and you buy where you think you can pay for it in 2 years, and you are taking a chance, there are chances you take in life. And, part of it is losing.
All right. Well, tell us about our guest speaker for today. Our story today.
It was funny. I called and I had someone give me a story. Then I looked. I said, oh, I've got a story in there. The story I did last November here in Paducah with a Toastmasters friend, and he was in commercial real estate for forever and ever and ever. And now I work at Coldwell Banker, but I interviewed him at the Coldwell Banker place. So let's start and listen to the story.
Donnie, my buddy of what, 3 years? How long was going on?
Three or four.
We just see each other a couple times a year, but we just got to know each other over the years. And we're just looking at doing a co-op venture in commercial real estate. What I like about Donnie is he's one of those people that's quiet and gets the job done. You're telling me about how you just did that in high school. You were president of everything but the ladies' soccer team.
Just about that. It was about time.
And now he's a leader in the real estate in the area. And we're in Paducah, Kentucky. Just barely in Kentucky. I mean, you can almost spit at the river. The bridge that goes over to Illinois from here, can't you?
It's not very far. We're also that close to Missouri and Tennessee.
That's right.
Indiana. We're closer to most of all those places than the other end of Kentucky.
And do you deal in commercial real estate in all those?
No. I try to stay right here. My policy is to not get out of the county very often.
And what's the name of this county?
McCracken County.
McCracken, that's what it is, yeah. I should know that.
It's treated me well for a long time. I've been doing this over 20 years. I made a decent living at it.
And you own the property where we're at right now doing the interview, don't you?
Yes, I do. I built that in 1995. It has two tenants in it now. I actually built it for my real estate company, which I owned up to 3 years ago. I owned it for 18 or 19 years and then sold it. But I still work here.
Yeah.
It's good to work here. It's nice
to work here without the responsibility.
Without the responsibility.
I'll just take the commission checks, please.
Hand them to your mail under the direct deposit.
Just fine with me. And, oh, payroll? Nah. You have that, right?
Right.
Oh, complex taxes? Oh, you handle that.
Isn't that cash flow? Definitely.
The ups and downs of the real estate market. You're super rich and paying 10 tons of taxes, or you're super poor and still paying 10 tons of taxes, but you just owe it.
I can't afford to pay it. I've done that before.
Yeah, real estate taxes are really high everywhere, aren't they?
They get worse every year, of course. You have a property that's not producing any income, and real estate taxes can kill you. like the negative cash flow situation, which no one likes.
No one likes a negative cash flow. You can't do that for very long, I found out.
You have to have deep pockets.
Yep. So in commercial real estate, which they have around here, I notice everything's sort of mixed up where the commercial areas are, where the residential areas are. They aren't very set.
Well, Paducah developed a little bit out of kilter. When the Confederates decided to put a mall here, they put a mall out on Highway 60, and it doesn't lead anywhere. Most of the time, you put a mall on roads that go somewhere.
Right.
So, consequently, the development has to be pushed faster because nobody wants to go past this little center of the mall area.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that want to be right on the main highway in front of the mall, but there's no more room. So that's a problem. If it had been planned out differently, or say we were laid out like Bowling Green, for instance, their highway goes to Nashville. So right. You can just keep adding commercial as long as you want to, and people are going by it. But here it doesn't work that way. Once you get past the mall itself, which is right against the interstate, there's just no place to go. It's residential all around it.
That's right. It's just one exit, too.
No, there's no planning.
Just one exit is all there are to the commercial area.
To the main commercial area. Of course, there's other things going on with what we call the south side of town, which I think is actually east of here.
It is mixed up.
I don't know why.
It's very confusing because you have three or four rivers all within about 20 miles, and they confuse everything.
They do. And when you do demographics, for instance, you might have a 5-mile radius, but it's cut off over here because there's a river and it's a different state, and it doesn't relate to anything. So your demographic, everything's messed up. And nobody ever knew about Paducah. I'm a member of the International Council of Shopping Centers, which is a worldwide organization. It has a meeting every May in Las Vegas. There's about 40,000 people there. It's a big deal. Every retailer in the world, all the developers, and me. The first time I went, no one had ever heard of Paducah, Kentucky. So the next year, I made up this little flyer I took and gave to everybody I met. And it said, Paducah, Kentucky, halfway between Possum Trot and Monkey's Eyebrow, and home of the world's number one Walmart supercenter, which is true. I confirmed that with a real estate VP from Walmart while I was out there.
And it's what?
It was the number one in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's right here in Paducah.
Wow.
But see, Paducah is a little town of 28,000 people. The whole county is only 62,000.
Right.
So anybody does a search using demographics to find a place to put a new restaurant, for instance, that doesn't even show up. Their radar set on 75 or 100,000 and up.
Right.
And so we don't even show up. But the fact is, almost every restaurant chain that is built here since the early 80s has been number one in its chain for some period of time.
Wow.
And the reason is because Paducah is a central place that people come to shop and to go to a doctor. That's why I built Paducah. But we're also halfway between two cities people have heard about, Nashville and St. Louis.
Right.
That way, and this way, it's Possum Trot, Monkey's Eyebrow. But for about a 45-mile radius, it's better to come here for shopping and for medical treatment, and to eat out and to go to movies and all those things people do from these little tiny towns than it is to drive all the way to Nashville and St. Louis or Memphis or Evansville. So we have about a 45-mile radius that includes a little over 300,000 people who shop here.
Wow.
So it's really an unknown little diamond in the rough as far as retail sales.
But
you have to educate people before they understood that.
Well, you got people coming from all four states, too, because there aren't any good-sized cities and I know in Illinois, you go up across the river, there's no good-sized towns there. You go to Missouri, there's none, and you go all the way to Tennessee before you find Memphis.
Nashville, Memphis.
Yeah.
Well, St. Louis, that's the four main cities. So there's a lot of opportunity here, but you have to educate people to it. And it wasn't, as you said, laid out correctly. So you have to make it work.
It was a river town.
Started as a river town a long time ago.
That's George Rogers, a lot of water stuff. Yep.
Laid it out.
Who did?
George Rogers Clark.
Oh.
When he was out doing things like that back in the old days.
There's a lot of Clark
stuff. He surveyed it.
There's a lot of Clark stuff around.
So I was always in the construction business most of my life. And I really got into real estate business just totally by accident. I've enjoyed it. It's been a great thing, but it's kind of weird that I started by accident. But my method of marketing construction, for instance, was just to know everybody.
Yes.
And I would find out what they wanted to do and negotiate a contract before anybody else even knew they were doing something. And I didn't have to bid on jobs. And so the fact that I knew all these people and what they own and what it's worth and stuff like that, there were two or three people here that dabbled in commercial real estate. Nobody really did it full time. They all claimed you couldn't make a living in it. But they would call me up and ask who owned this and what it's worth and how to contact them and all that. And I would hear a little bit later that they sold that and got a 10% commission.
Yeah, bigger commissions.
And I'm thinking, there's something wrong with this picture because I'm the one that knows the people. And they're the ones making the money. So I decided to get my real estate license and sell real estate along with the construction because I could just fit together. The first year I made $3,000. It was a great year for real estate.
That isn't a lot for real estate.
No.
But it's better.
It was
than,
very little.
Better than a kick in the tail compared to nothing.
Well, as a friend of mine used to say, it's better to poke an out of a sharp stick.
That's right.
But anyway, it got better. It did get a little bit better. And for a while, I had my own construction company, and I was building stuff everywhere. I built mostly restaurants in front of the mall. Any of those you eat in, we built those. And when I started in the real estate business, I could sell people land and then build them a building.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great combination. If somebody's looking at a building they want to use for a certain type of use, then I could tell them, just sitting there in a few minutes, tell them what it costs them to remodel it to fit what they want, instead of them having to go out and hire a contractor and get estimates and all that kind of stuff. So we could analyze a piece of property and see if this would work without spending a lot of time and effort and getting the people involved. So that was a real selling point. And then if they bought that property, I could do the remodeling for them. So people like Pier 1 over here, for instance, at the mall you've seen in, I sold them the property and built the building.
Wow.
It was a great combination. But it got to be, construction got to be a little bit too much like work. And that just doesn't fit me very well. So I quit building things about 1997. Except that I did some developing. All the West Park Village across the mall that you may have seen, I've sold all that land and I set up corporations that built those buildings, leased them out, and then I sold the property and did the leasing, did the management. I like those things where you get paid five different ways. You get paid to sell the property, you get paid as an owner of the property, you get paid to lease the property, you get paid to manage the property, and then you finally get paid when you sell the property. So I like those kind of things.
That's what you call a commercial real estate wizard.
Yes, if you get them all, if you get five ways, you get paid on every deal, then you'd be real happy.
That's right.
It doesn't happen every day.
But any one of them is nice money.
It's been a good, I've sold probably, I think I had one time I sold 125 convenience stores. It was a good year.
That is awesome.
A lot of convenience stores. It's amazing how things happen. Marketing and real estate is a whole new thing. I've had to learn so much new stuff that I didn't used to know. Used to, when you're a commercial real estate guy, somebody call you and you sell them something. Every now and then you call somebody else, but now you have to understand websites and you have to understand social media and you have to do blogs and you have to understand how to get Google to notice your website and you have to know what to put on there. you got to do a lot of different things that nobody ever dreamed of before. But if you don't do that, then nobody knows you're there and you don't get any work.
Great.
So one thing I have is I have a blog called Donnie's Commercial Property and Restaurant Blog. And that sounds a little bit funny at first, but I found that most people who have enough money to come to Paducah and buy a commercial property also have enough money to eat well. So the first thing they do before they get to town is to research and Google restaurants in Paducah, Kentucky. And when they do that, they get my blog. And I have articles in there, posts about all the great local unique restaurants. It's kind of interesting. So I hope that maybe if they come in and they want to get a good meal and they search for Paducah restaurants and they find my blog, and they might just remember me.
That's a really great idea.
The best way to make money in commercial real estate is to know the developers, the people who deal directly with the big users like Kohl's or Kroger or whoever that is, Walmart, any of those big users. If you know those people, then when they want to come to your town, you're the one that helps them find the property. We have a 22-acre piece of land right adjacent to the mall that sold twice. It was a good thing.
That's nice. You can sell forever. You really want to make sure it's, you know, it's not like the bridge, you know, Brooklyn Bridge.
No, when I sell a piece of property, it's little work.
Oh, I.
It's not like the bridge. Not like the bridge. I've never attempted to sell a bridge because I learned when I was in a construction company, we all knew that was the fastest way to go broke was to build bridges.
Yep. Unless you're really good at getting the government to have add-ons.
Well, yeah, but then you know, you just prolong the agony because you know the definition of a successful contractor, don't you?
What?
That's the one that's not broke yet.
It happens to almost every one of them out somewhere along the way.
It really does. Mm. It's been a lot of fun, though. I've done a lot of interesting projects. I've got to meet a lot of great people.
Oh, I bet.
And I'm still doing it. I'm a little bit older than I was. I don't plan to ever retire because I'm having fun.
That's nice. That's nice. When you have a place call home and you have wonderful people, and you have something that you can do and also make money at, which is really wonderful.
It's really good if you make money at what you love to do.
Oh, it is. That's just,
I think it is what you love to do regardless of whether you make money, but it's better if you make money.
Always. There's a money-making thing. And for me, I just find it just sort of lights up. I mean, I got like, oh, money-making. I get a little... Right. It has to be. First of all, I have to have all the other prerequisites. I have to love it and everything else. You too. It's the same way.
If you'd like it, it's fun.
That's right.
Making money helps, though, because it's like Oprah Winfrey says, and she actually stole this from Pearl Bailey, but she didn't tell anybody. But she says, "Honey, I've been rich and I've been poor, and rich is better." Well, that's true. There's nothing wrong with making money, doing what you love to do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, money is, money is neutral. It's how you use it and how you enjoy it. And commercial real estate is a wonderful way to go if you're really good at it. But it is streaks.
It is boom or bust. You're either broke or you're rich temporarily.
Try it.
If you're smart, of course you could level that out, but I've never been smart. So I'm either broke or rich.
But if you can get a steady place where you own some of the properties like you have and rent them off and have good renters, that sort of evens the stuff out.
Yeah, and that's a great retirement fund. One of the things I'm trying to teach people about it to specialize in right now is to show people how to invest their IRA and 401k funds in real estate. Because I don't know if you read this book by Robert Kiyosaki. He wrote it in 2001 called The Coming Crash. It sounds imminent, but he's talking about 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he said it's going to crash in 2016 is because the government changed, the feds changed the rules where we all invest our own funds. The companies don't do a fixed retirement where they give you the money and you do what you want with it. Well, people don't know what to do with it, so they buy mutual funds. That's okay. But by 2016, there's enough of us baby boomers, 80 million of us over an 18-year period, but 80 million of us, there'd be enough of us selling stocks every month to live on out of our IRAs that's going to cause it to be a complete and total seller's market. Buyer's market, I'm sorry. And he said it's going to crash like 90%. Well, if you own real estate in your IRA, it's cash producing, especially residential income producing properties, for instance, every month they bring in cash. So when you get to the point you start drawing money out of your IRA to live on, you just draw the cash out. Next month it's replenished. You draw some out, it's replenished. So you never have to sell your assets to live on. And of course, if you're like me, anytime you're forced to sell something, it's always at the lowest price.
Right.
So you don't want to be forced to sell stocks to get money to live on.
Wow.
So I'm working on a whole program to help people not only learn how to, but actually set up a self-directed IRA and buy real estate in it so they can have good retirement funds and not have to worry about being wiped out by stock market crashes or just having to sell their assets to live on.
Wow. Hear that? That's a system. That's some advice.
That's one of my favorite things.
From a super duper commercial real estate guru.
I was going to say guru would be a good word to stick
in. I love it. Yeah, I fish.
Guru so, is fine.
So,
actually, so, I may not be accurate with it.
Well, it's accurate for me, so I'll say.
Yeah, I talk about having 20 years of experience, or actually 22. But some people just have 1 year of experience 22 times. It's not exactly the same.
So I say, Donnie McKinney, Old Man Stories. That's what you say.
Oh, Donnie McKinney, Old Man Stories.
Yay!
I don't know if I like the old man part of this thing.
You are an old man. I can just ask your kids and your grandkids, and they aren't going to call you again.
They may know.
They're the ones. They're the judges, Donna. So we're just participants.
Maybe by the time I see this, I will be old.
See y'all.
That's a really good piece of advice to put reviews, things on a blog for your business, just for non-related things in the area. I'll have to keep that in mind. Not that I have anything to advertise. But anyway, no, that's interesting philosophy. I'm glad to have him on the show.
Yeah, Donnie he's a Toastmaster, and he's a president this year of the Toastmasters in Paducah.
Hmm.
And we moved from a pizza place to a university. We're going to have meetings at the university for a while, for however long they were there. The Toastmasters are relatively new here, and they're setting up another one in a little area called Murray, close to here. I was going to go tonight, but I don't know where it is, so I'll have to wait till someone can drive me there. Everyone seems to be out of town tonight. And then the other thing I was going to might go to was a dam, and my the fellow that plays there that I know, he's gone. So it's like everyone's out of town.
It's about time for us to get out of town, though.
It's getting close, isn't it?
Yep, there's the music. So it's been real, and thanks for joining us, and hopefully we've learned something about the second estate or whatever estate this is. Thanks for joining us on Old Men Stories. See you next week.
Whether you're buying or selling a home, the art of ownership is a complex maze of forms and inspections and finding the right place, or giving up the wrong place. What sorts of real stories have you experienced in your travels of real estate? Jeff Young.
Roland Willits.
Old Men Stories.
You've been listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. The story for the day may end here, but the adventure continues. Join us next time for another round of stories around the virtual campfire. Roland and Jeff want to hear what stories you have to share too. Join the circle over at www.oldmenstories.org or send Roland and Jeff an email at oldmenstories@wq4d.net. That's oldmenstories@wq4d.net. And remember that you are already a master storyteller in your own right. We want to hear your story.